And now it's time for a segment in which we steal somebody else's great idea. It's called Ripped Off from the Headlines. And today we're pulling the cover story from the November issue of Good magazine about the Nostradamus of political science, Bruce Bueno de Mesquita. He spent the last 25 years coming up with a computer model to predict the future of international politics. And the amazing thing is, he says it works. As one CIA analyst said, he's about right 90% of the time. Bueno de Mesquita has successfully predicted who would take power in Iran and Russia, how China would crack down on dissidents. And I know this sounds absolutely crazy, Allison, but I think of it this way. You know, there are these hedge funds, and they use these mathematical models, and they make guesses about the financial markets,
sure.
And they make billions of dollars. And the good poker players use statistics and psychology to see if they'll get a flush on the river or whatever those kids talk about with their poker. And they make money with it. But international politics, doesn't that seem a little more complex
than
the markets? Maybe not. So we've invited Bruce Bueno de Mesquita, the chairman of New York University's Department of Political Science, and a senior fellow at the Hoover Institute at Stanford University, to our show. Bruce, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing great. So you got to forgive me if I'm a little skeptical about this. I mean, when I took political science, it was much more of an art. You had to know culture and understand that there were irrational human beings out there. And basically, it was about studying the past, not predicting the future. So how is it possible to predict what someone like Kim Jong-il in North Korea or Al-Qaeda will do next?
Well, unfortunately, when you studied political science, you didn't get as good an education as you might have.
You weren't my professor.
I wasn't your professor. So the basic idea behind the modeling I do and looking at somebody like, for example, Kim Jong-il, is to assume that everybody is interested in two things in any kind of negotiation. They're interested in the outcome on the negotiation, getting what they want, but they're also interested egotistically in getting credit for helping to put a deal together, or if they prefer, blocking a deal. So if you look at somebody like Kim Jong-il and you start by working out what is it that he wants, you come pretty quickly to the conclusion that what he wants is to stay in power and that his nuclear weapons program is merely an instrument to help him do that. Then you work through the logic and you see what kind of an arrangement you could make with him that would achieve the objective that, in this case, for example, the U.S. had in mind, which is to get rid of his nuclear weapons, and that he had in mind, which is to keep his job.
Well, don't players on the international scene act irrationally? Don't they make decisions that aren't logical?
Well, I'm afraid not. It seems not, anyway. The 90% accuracy, which is across many thousands of applications, suggests that a theory that assumes that they're rational is probably accurate. The trouble with the word rational is that people misunderstand it. Rational doesn't mean super clever. It doesn't mean that you get everything right. It just means that each individual does what he or she believes is in their best interest. And, of course, their belief may turn out to be wrong.
Well, give us a simple explanation of how this works. You have an actual supercomputer, is that right?
I ran this on a supercomputer many years ago. These days it can be run on a laptop, and I run it on a laptop.
And you input what? How do you input someone like Kim Jong-il into a data model?
So everybody who is trying to influence a decision is represented by just three numbers. Those three numbers are an estimate of where they stand on the policy issue that's being analyzed. So that's been defined on a scale. Second, I identify how focused they are on the issue in question. That is, how willing are they to drop what they're doing and attend to this issue rather than other things on their plate when it comes up? And third, relative to the other parties who are trying to influence the decision, how much clout could they exert if they chose to work as hard at it as they could?
Well, impress me here. What's been your greatest prediction that people just were like, how can he know this?
Well, I suppose one of my very first predictions was one that blew a lot of people away, and that was that in 1984, I predicted who would succeed Ayatollah Khomeini when he died. I predicted that in print, and he died 5 years later, so there was no ambiguity about it's being a real prediction. And I identified two people, Rafsanjani and Khamenei, as the people who would succeed Khomeini at a time when Khomeini in Iran had named his successor, a guy named Ayatollah Montessori, and people thought that I was crazy. It turned out to be right. In terms of significant predictions, there is one international organization in the world that currently has both China and Taiwan in it. That's the Asian Development Bank. And I designed, with this a primitive version of this model, I designed the bargaining strategy that resulted in that. I've been very proud of that. More recently, this model, a couple of years ago, was used to make some very specific predictions about actions Al-Qaeda would or would not take. That turned out to be right, and I thought that was pretty important. And even more recently, designed a bargaining approach to Kim Jong-il. I can't say that the government listened to it, but I can say that, although it was done for the government, I can say that what's reported in the press looks an awful lot like the deal that I proposed a couple of years ago.
I know you work with the CIA and with private corporations who employ you to run this modeling software for negotiations and that kind of such. But this is such a powerful model. If it actually works, shouldn't you be using this for good, telling people what will happen in the future?
Well, I like to think I am using it for good. Helping our country improve its foreign policy is certainly something it could use. I'm not the corner psychic, and so as a result, deciding what things to look at is a complicated question. There are a lot of questions to be asked in the world, and so I prefer to let people who are trying to shape, for example, policy in the State Department and in the intelligence community to come to me with questions that they feel they need answers to, and then answer them in the hope that they will listen to the advice that comes out of the modeling, and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And when they do, I feel I am doing good. Likewise, in the private sector, when a company comes to me with a very difficult problem, whether it's a litigation problem or a regulatory problem, or they're seeking a merger or an acquisition, I feel giving them the best advice that they can get is doing good for them and good socially.
Now, we want to give you your chance. This interview will be archived forever at NPR.org. So give us a prediction about the next couple of years that we can hold you to and call you back in a couple of years.
Well, I have a book out called Predicting Politics that is full of predictions through the year 2030.
And I predict you'll sell lots of copies of that book.
It's not a big seller. I don't have a prediction off the top of my head. I can tell you in that book that among the predictions although it's now clearly the case that it's happening, but the book was published several years ago, definite erosion in democracy in Russia will continue.
Okay. Well, I hate to leave you with that, but this is a cliffhanger. So thank you very much for joining us. Bruce Bueno de Mesquita is the chairman of New York University's Department of Political Science.
Thank you.